All right, good morning once again, and good to be with you. If you're visiting, glad you're here. We are in the book of Proverbs today, finishing our series next week, actually. And I've enjoyed it a lot, this series, and I hope it's been good for you as well, just looking at wisdom and growing. How do we grow in wisdom? And just a heads up, the next series we'll be in after Proverbs will be in the Gospel of Luke. We're going to look at some of the parables of Jesus that are specific to the Gospel of Luke, and we'll post that that series schedule to our website this week, I think even tomorrow, so you guys can look at that and read ahead if that's the kind of person you are. But that's what we're going to be in next today in Proverbs. And Proverbs is meant to teach us wisdom. Wisdom is a deep and thorough understanding about reality. Understanding the way things really work and the way things really are, so you know how to make the best decisions, the right choices. We've talked about a number of different subjects so far, and today we're talking about the wisdom that we find in Proverbs about envy. I don't think I've ever preached on envy before. I'm actually not sure I've ever said the word envy in a sermon before. And I told Megan that, and she was like, "You just preached on envy. What are you talking about?" But that must have been her other husband, who is also a preacher. I hope they're happy. We're winding down in this series in Proverbs, and Proverbs talks about so much. So there's so many things we could choose to talk about. But I did feel some conviction about this because the Bible talks about envy. Proverbs talks about envy, and I haven't. And so I want us all to hear what God has to say about envy. And so that's what we're doing today. Envy is for you Catholics or come from Catholic. I think it's a Catholic thing, the seven deadly sins. Spoiler alert, like all sins are deadly. And it's not like there's only seven that are really bad. But the reason that they're deadly is because it's not really about the sin itself. The sin is a symptom of a deadly disease, which is our sin nature, where we don't have hearts that naturally love, trust, and worship God. But anyways, we're talking about envy today, one of the seven deadly sins. We're going to drill down and get into what exactly envy is, why envy makes you a fool rather than wise, and what we do with our envy so that we can grow in wisdom. First, what exactly envy is. A lot of what Proverbs has to say about envy is sort of following the same track. And so just looking at two of them, Proverbs 3 says this: "Do not envy a man of violence, and do not choose any of his ways, for the devious person is an abomination to the Lord, but the upright are in his confidence." And then Proverbs 24, much the same: "Be not envious of evil men, nor desire to be with them, for their hearts devise violence and their lips talk of trouble." Right? Essentially, Proverbs is warning us against envy, specifically being envious of violent and wicked people. And that advice seems pretty straightforward. And I think it's something like, you remember the show The Sopranos? If you're old enough to watch that, or if you just like know of it, where it's about this guy who is like, he has charisma, and he's James Gandolfini. He's like a very charismatic guy. He's funny. Like, he cares about his friends, and he's like pretty successful, but he's also like this very violent, wicked dude, like horrible criminal, and that's bad. Right? You know, I don't know if you know that or not. The Bible is against that. And it says, don't be envious of someone who has maybe some of these great things in their lives, or they have certain success, but there's this violence or this wickedness or this evil. There's one other spot we get a good look at envy. It's not in Proverbs, it's Psalm 73. And so look at this, Psalm 73, starting in verse 1. "Truly God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart, but as for me, my feet had almost stumbled, my steps had nearly slipped, for I was envious of the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. For they have no pangs until death, their bodies are fat and sleek, they are not in trouble as others are, they are not stricken like the rest of mankind. I was envious of the arrogant." I wasn't envying their arrogance. Like, I didn't see that aspect of them and be like, wow, I wish I could be as unreasonably self-confident as this person is. Like, that would be great. It's not that, but looking at their lives. Like they have this wickedness and this arrogance, but at the same time, they have these lives that kind of seem pretty great, right? They're prosperous, they're rich, they have money, they're not struggling with bills. They can afford to go on nice vacations, they can buy nice things. Their cars aren't always breaking down. They have no pangs until death. They're not in trouble like the rest of us are. And they don't have all the problems that I have in my life, all the things that I see. And I'm trying to do everything right, but I have this and this and this, and I see them over there, and they're not dealing with tragedy or suffering or loss or setback or humiliation or like no injustice is ever inflicted on them. Everything just seems to work out for them. And even their bodies are fat and sleek. Not fat like, but like, you know, I mean, maybe, but fat in the sense that, you know, you think of thousands of years ago when food availability is a little different. They're not starving, right? They're healthy and they're sleek. They're good looking. These people just have everything. From this, we can start to see envy is desiring someone else's life. You know, you see other people who have it better than you or have better things than you or better success than you, and you want what they have. But it even goes beyond that because it's not just, it doesn't stop at wanting what other people have. Envy resents and hates people for having the things that you don't have, but you want. Like, you're not happy for them, like, oh, that's so great for you. That's so great that everything is working out in your life and you have so much money and you look great. You know, I'm so happy for you. Like, you've done some really amazing things. I wish I could be as great at these things as you are. There's not any of that. Like, the psalmist here is not happy about these people's happiness. Envy is... the way envy manifests is you become unhappy at other people's happiness, right? It's weeping because people are rejoicing, because they have reason to rejoice and you don't have those same reasons, so you're weeping for yourself. And if you think you don't have a problem with envy, it's like sometimes you hear a sermon, you go, well, that one, you know, it's not really me. If you think you don't have a problem with envy, this works the other way too. And just ask yourself this, how do you feel, just honestly, when you see someone else get humbled and they suffer a loss, they suffer a setback, they get knocked down? Be honest. Sometimes, don't you feel pretty good about that? Like, don't you find comfort for yourself in that? You feel more secure in yourself because now by comparison, you're like, at least you're not going through that. I mean, envy is, it's not just unhappy at other people's happiness, it's being happy at other people's unhappiness. They're weeping and you're laughing. You know, and it's not always like your neighbor, or your friend, or your brother or sister, but like, you know, like a celebrity, a politician, just someone who's got a little bit of fame, and maybe you don't like them. Maybe it is someone you know, and it's someone that you don't like. And then when that person, that celebrity or that person you know, when they take a hit, that must be devastating for them. But you feel good about yourself. You feel happy about it. That's envy. Envy is the entire basis for like this relatively new phenomena. It's not like it's existed before, but the internet's just made it worse. The digital mob that goes after people when they're caught doing or saying something that we all kind of acknowledge, like that's not good. But what people will say, like the whole digital mob that like tries to get them fired and like expose them and like just kind of burn their life down, they'll say like, well, we're holding them accountable. This is just justice. We're just trying to make things right. It's not really about that, because that doesn't explain the fervor and the glee with which people will go after these people. It's frightening, the level of passion that someone can have about that. It's not about accountability. It's about knocking this person down and making sure they end up beneath you so you can feel better than them because you are better than them. You're superior to them, and you want them to know that. That's what is the sick thing in us that makes us that passionate about knocking someone down. Now, here's why envy makes you a fool. Why people who are wise cannot let their envy have a large presence in their lives and minimize it as much as possible. Three reasons envy makes you a fool. One, in some degree, this is true of like all sins and all areas of foolishness in your life, but it's your unawareness of it. Your unawareness of your envy makes you foolish. Because it's like a tumor that you don't know about, right? It's in you, it's growing, it's creating pressure. Maybe it even sends some pangs every now and then, but you ignore the pain and you're not aware of the reality of this thing that's growing and is becoming greater and bigger and making more and more problems. If wisdom is a deep and thorough understanding of reality, anytime you're ever in denial about like some problem in your life, some flaw in you, any kind of like ignorance about that, that's foolishness. And we're generally not comfortable admitting our flaws about anything, right? And we've talked about some of these before, but people go, well, I'm not an angry person. I'm just Italian. This is just the way we talk. And you're like, no, not all of this is you being Italian. Like, don't blame your sins on your heritage. You know, stop doing that. I don't have a problem with greed. I'm just smart about my money. You know? But if you're incapable of ever being generous, you just can't do it, that's a problem. But you don't want to see it. We don't like to admit flaws and weaknesses and sins and failures, and so we come with our excuses and our justifications and we call it something else. But envy is maybe harder than some other things to admit, I think. Because it's a little bit embarrassing if you really acknowledge your envy. Acknowledging your envy means you're acknowledging like, yeah, you know what? I am a bitter person. You know, I am petty. There are times when I am just such a small, petty, insecure person that, you know, I have to root for and celebrate the fall of other people around me, and I become so dissatisfied and miserable when other people are doing well. I don't think most people are walking around with a good, accurate, objective understanding of how envious they actually are. We call it other things. We identify it as other things, and we say, that here are the reasons for it, you know. I'm not envious. I just care about fairness. It's just unfair. And I just want things to be right. Here's how you look for envy in yourself, how you start to see it. And one, we just talked about it, but look at examples, because you can actually do this. When's the last time I heard about like someone being knocked down? And look at yourself. How did I respond to that? How did I feel about that? And that makes you feel good. That's an indication of your envy. You might also be able to notice your envy if you start looking for your complaints, all the things you complain about. And if you're like a really critical person, you're always finding fault, it's a sign of your envy. Like if there's one person you could never just give a pass to, you're always going to criticize something about them no matter what, it's a sign that there's some envy directed at that person or that involves that person. But there's also, you know, if you're the kind of person who's always full of self-pity, you're always unhappy about how your life is going and you feel like a victim and nothing is fair ever for you, yet that might be an indication that you have a general sense of envy towards most people around you. You just see like other, you know, like no one else has this problem. How come no one else has this problem? Full of self-pity. Because you're envying people in general who don't have to deal with this thing that you believe you are unfairly dealing with. Everyone has envy to some degree, but being unaware of it completely is foolishness. T. 2, envy makes you foolish because it ruins your happiness. And this is like just the worst part of it, really. Well, I don't know. It's bad. Envy makes you unable to appreciate the things that you have. And you might have some really good things in your life. You might have good people in your life and good opportunities and great blessings from God that you're meant to enjoy, and that so many other people, if they had those things, they would just celebrate that. But not you. Because it's not good enough. It's not good enough for you. Every stab of envy in your heart, it's like a needle. It's poking a little hole in your soul, and you start to drip and drain and lose your happiness more and more. It's comparison. The sport that envy competes in is comparison, and the person who said comparison is the thief of joy got it exactly right. Envy has you in its grip when nothing is ever good enough. There's always something wrong. There's always something lacking, something that could be better, some dissatisfaction, because you're never just looking at what you have. You're always keeping an eye on what you wish you would have, what you really want. So you're looking at what you want, and you're looking at what you have, and you're always comparing those two things. And it takes so many forms. It does so much damage. You know the one I've been thinking about recently? With envy, I've been thinking about the dad whose kids are never good enough. And like, it could be the mom too, and this could be apply broadly to many things, but I'm thinking about the dad whose kids are never good enough. So like sports, he loves sports, and he gets his kids into sports, and like they do their game, and they're doing their best, and they try really hard, and they want to make their dad proud, and maybe they had a great game. Maybe they did some amazing things. There was a great moment in it, and even if they win the game, and they come over to the dad after, and they just want to go, did you see me? How did I do? And he goes, how'd you miss that one? You know, we've practiced that again and again and again. We've been over it. You have to get those. You can't let those go. Picking on the one thing they did wrong, the one mistake. And it's not just sports, although it is sports. It could be grades. It could be just being a person, like helping around the house, how you eat, how you put the dishes away, how you pick up your room, how you hold the flashlight when he's fixing something. Like, everyone's had that experience, right? And like, you know, it's not you in the flashlight. It's because of the weird angle and the thing that you can't get, and it is frustrating, but you just can never do anything right. What an awful, terrible experience for those kids. To try and try and try and try and try and eventually understand, I will never be good enough. And have to wonder for too long, why am I not good enough? What's wrong with me? Before hopefully you come to the realization at some point, it's not actually me. It's him. Something in him, something broken, something wrong, making him unable to just be glad and appreciate what he has, appreciate that he has kids, kids who like him, who love him, who want to make him proud. Unable to cherish what he has. Envy can be a devastating thing. Families, friendships. Like if your envy manifests in like the nitpicking, criticism, like that's gonna cause a lot of pressure and issues. But even if it just manifests more internally into that self-pity, because think about it, like how much do you enjoy it when every time you spend time with a person, the whole time and every time, they're just full of complaints and self-pity and woe is me and nothing is fair and I'm the victim. And I'm not saying that like in your friendships, you can never or should never like share what you're going through. Like you should be able to do that. And even if you're going through like a rough season in your life, I'm not saying you need to pretend you're not, but this is all the time, every time, never gets better. They're not looking for any kind of help or support. They're looking for agree with me. I'm the victim. Pity me. Tell me it's unfair to me. Oh, and it never gets better. It never changes. When you are filled with that kind of self-pity resulting from your incurable envy, you might find that you have less and less people who want to listen to you as the years go by. It's a lack of perspective, right? It's like when you have a stuffy nose and then you're reminiscing on all the good times you could breathe and you're like, oh, what an idiot. I didn't even appreciate it that I could just breathe, you know? You're like, oh, if I could just breathe right now, and that's all you're thinking about. But when you can breathe fine, you weren't thinking about that until I said it, right? What are the things in your life you don't appreciate? Maybe they're invisible to you. You're not thinking about it. You're not appreciating. You're not cherishing the things that if you were to lose them or when they're gone, then you're going to be able to see how good it was. And then you're going to be in a place where you're envying your old self and still dissatisfied, still miserable. Envy ruins your happiness. It steals your joy. And especially, it ruins and steals any joy that you can and should have in your relationship with God. Because you have a God who loves you so much. He has grace for you. He sent his son Jesus for you. He saves you. But when you're dissatisfied with your life, who's the easiest person to blame? The person you know could make everything better if he wanted to, and it's not getting better, it's not turning out the way that I want, and so he's choosing not to, and you start to resent God. That's what we find in Psalm 73. Psalm 73 talks about envying the wicked and the arrogant, seeing how great they have it. I'm an upright person, but my life is so much harder than theirs. Psalm 73, verse 21 says, when my soul was embittered, when I was pricked in heart, I was brutish and ignorant. I was like a beast towards you, toward God. When the psalmist is in the midst of all this envy aimed at people who are less righteous than him, but have it better, I was brutish and ignorant and like a beast towards you, God. I was incapable of trusting you. I was incapable of seeing all the things you have given me and appreciating you for all the things that you've given me. I'm just mad at you for what you're holding out. Three. So, envy makes you a fool because you're unaware of it. It makes you a fool because it steals your happiness. Three, it makes you foolish because the presence of envy in you indicates you're missing out on the most important thing. And the most important thing is to center your whole life on God. That's what the Bible tells us to do, and that's the wise thing to do, understanding and acknowledging reality, right? God is the creator. He's the one who created the universe. He created me and you and all of us and all of reality. It all belongs to him. Everything is his. We are his. He ought to be the center of our lives. We should make knowing God the foundation and the purpose of our lives. Build the foundation of our happiness on him. Make the great aim of our life, our pursuit of him, knowing him, trusting him, walking with him, delighting ourselves in him. And if we were ever able to do that perfectly, on that day that you do that perfectly, there's going to be no envy in you at all. There's no place for it because you have it. You have everything you want. You'd be in perfect possession of the thing that you want most, that you're centering yourself on. You can't get any more of it because God gives himself to you. God radically commits himself to us unconditionally forever in Jesus. We get eternal security in him. There's nothing to be insecure about. Like seeing what other people have and like, oh, you know, I want that. No, because I know what I do have, and what I have is enough. What I have is more than enough for me. What I have in Jesus is more than I could ever hope for. This grace that he gives me, this love that he gives me, his presence in my life. Our envy means there are other things we are trying to center our lives on. There are other things we are trying to put in God's place, and we're making more important to us than him. People's approval, status, money, experiences, comfort, power, anything. The sport envy competes in is comparison, and whatever you find yourself comparing in others, or even the kind of people that you compare yourself to, that's going to show you what are the things or the thing I'm trying to center my life on and put in God's place. Like maybe you envy someone who lives in a much nicer house than you. Maybe the reason for that is actually the house. Maybe you're a creature of comfort and you just want the luxury and the peace of that amazing house that they live in. But maybe it's not that. Maybe it's the status of having that house and living in that neighborhood and being in that tax bracket. Or maybe you envy the person with that really nice house because they graduated with you in the same degree and went into the same field, and they are doing so much better than you professionally. And you feel insecure about that, and you envy their lives because they are succeeding in the thing that you desperately want to succeed at. Thing is, if you center your life on anything other than God, you're always going to be insecure. Because only God has this unshakable and unquestionable security to offer. Like even the most successful people in the world. And this is a story you hear again and again. I just saw this interview, it was probably old, but with Billy Joel. Kind of a candid interview where he talks about how for so much of his career, he hated his own work. The vast majority of it was never good enough. Even though like if anyone's made it in music, Billy Joel has made it. Like, you can't stop singing his catchy little songs. Like, he's everywhere, you know, elevators. He's reached the pinnacles of success, and it's not good enough. It's never good enough for him because he's comparing himself and his work to, like, this ideal that he's created in his mind. I want to create the most perfect, masterful, influential piece of art that's ever been created. Like that's the thing that he wants to do, and he's not living up to it, and so he's experiencing all this success, and he's still miserable. He's still insecure, maybe even more than you are. Imagine being that influential and well-known and well-loved and being miserable. That's what envy does. Where if you're centered on God and you're secure in him, you can still do the things that you like. Like if you want to make music, you can make music, but you can enjoy the music you make because it doesn't have to be the thing that means your life is worth something, that means that your life has value and that your existence is justified. The music doesn't have to do that. God gives that to you. Jesus gives that to you. And so you can just enjoy the stuff that you do. You can enjoy the stuff that you make. I didn't like fully mean to do this, but I just kind of answered point number three. What is envy? Why does it make us so foolish? And three, what do we do with our envy to become wiser? And so, yeah, center yourself on God. But that's not enough of an answer, and there's still more to say. And so to say it, Proverbs 23, take a look at this. Let not your heart envy sinners, but continue in the fear of the Lord all the day. Surely there is a future, and your hope will not be cut off. Here's the wisdom Proverbs gives us, right? Instead of envying sinners, people have no regard for God. God is not central to their lives. Rather, continue in the fear of the Lord, and surely there is a future and a hope. You look ahead to this future and this hope. Two steps that you take. You bring your envy and your dissatisfaction, your insecurity to God in the fear of the Lord, and then you bring your envy ahead into the future hope that's guaranteed to you as a believer in Jesus. Let's talk about what that looks like. Probably 5 weeks ago-ish, we did a sermon on the fear of the Lord and what that has to do with wisdom. And what we found in examining the fear of the Lord is that it's not the same thing as being scared of God. Right? It's not being frightened of God because of how much power he has, and if you take the wrong step, he's going to strike you down. That's not what the fear of the Lord is. The fear of the Lord is a sense of awe and wonder at the magnificence and the glory of God and the beauty of God. Right? It's an attitude that happens in your heart where God becomes so peerlessly good to you. Nothing on earth can come before him. Nothing is above him. Nothing is beside him. Right? It's when God looms so large in your heart that you marvel at him. And that changes everything about how you live. That comes from experiencing God's goodness and his beauty. That's not something that comes from logical understanding. It's not something that comes from like, okay, that makes sense to me. God created everything. That makes sense to me. Jesus forgives sin. I can agree with that. It doesn't come from that. It comes from not just knowing about those things, but experiencing those things. It's one thing to know God. It's another thing to feel his goodness. The psalmist in Psalm 73 talks about this when he talks about his turning point, what kind of jolts him out of this envy that is eating at him. It talks about going into the sanctuary of God, having an experience in the sanctuary of God. David talks about this in Psalm 63, this sanctuary experience. And I think it'll be a little more helpful for us to look at the one in Psalm 63. And so Psalm 63, verse 2 says this, "So I have looked upon you in the sanctuary, beholding your power and glory, because your steadfast love is better than life. My lips will praise you. So I will bless you as long as I live. In your name I will lift up my hands. My soul will be satisfied as with fat and rich food. And my mouth will praise you with joyful lips when I remember you upon my bed and meditate on you in the watches of the night. For you have been my help, and in the shadow of your wings I will sing for joy. My soul clings to you. Your right hand upholds me." You see how different that is from just like agreeing and knowing and agreeing with the fact that God loves you, the fact that God's good, the fact that God has grace. This is feeling a sense on the heart. God's love is so unbelievably good, so unimaginably powerful. I'm so deeply moved and affected by this. Feeling the warmth of his embrace, his smile on you. God's love, his goodness, it becomes as real to you as any other love and goodness that you might experience from your parents, from your spouse, your kids, your friends, and the way that those are real to you. This is real to you. This is what it's all about, you know? Like for us, it's not about getting people to sit in seats and come to church on Sunday, or getting them into groups, or getting people to give money. It's like it's not about things like that. It's about getting you to know God like this. Or like as much as we're able to. And often as much as we're able to do is get you to a place where you want to know God like this. You desire to know God like this and have this experience. Like when we get people there, that's amazing. When we get people to a place where they're actually openly seeking God and they're praying, "God, I want to know you. I want to know how good you are. I want to experience your love. Would you help me to have an experience of your goodness and your beauty and your love so that I can know what it's like to be loved by you?" When you seek God like that, you know what Jesus says? He says, "Ask and it will be given, seek and you will find, knock and the door will be opened to you." See, even if you're, you know, kind of nervous about that, and maybe you are, and just kind of unsure about seeking God in that way because you know what you've done and you know how you've lived. It's like in Psalm 73, it was like a brute to you, it was like a beast to you, God. What if that was too much? What if the door's closed for me? Remember in Psalm 73, so he says that. He acknowledges, this is the way I was to you. And the very next thing he writes, verse 23, nevertheless, I am continually with you. You hold my right hand. You guide me with your counsel. And afterward, you will receive me to glory. Whom have I in heaven but you? And there is nothing on earth that I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. So even though, and this is everyone, we are brutes toward God. We are beasts. We are ignorant. And yet he is continually with us, holding on to us. Like even when you try to kick and scratch God away, he doesn't let you go. He hasn't let you go. By the way, Psalm 73:25, this is a verse I have inscribed on the inside of my wedding ring. It's not something I feel like I've ever lived up to perfectly, but for me, it's a goal that I hope to grow in more and more. Making God the center of my life, putting him first, letting him take up all. God is perfectly unenvious. We're envious, right? But God doesn't resent us when we get better than we deserve. You know, that's not fair. You don't deserve things that good. He gives us better than we deserve. He wants us to experience better than we deserve. He's not celebrating and, you know, having this great moment when we experience suffering, when we experience loss because of our foolishness and our sin. You know what he does? He sends his son Jesus to us. The reason that we can know God is unconditionally committed to us, full of grace, because if you don't know that, maybe you're holding yourself back from faith, you're holding yourself back from putting yourself out there to God and saying, I want to trust you, I want to know you, I want to be forgiven, and you're holding yourself back from that because you don't know if God's actually going to accept you. You don't know if this could actually be for you. We can know God is committed to us because on the cross, Jesus experiences the exact opposite of Psalm 73. Right? Psalm 73, the psalmist is living the wrong way before God. I was a brute to you, God. I was full of resentment toward God, dissatisfied with God, and yet finds God was holding my hand. He never let me go. Jesus lives perfectly righteous and upright and perfect before God. And when he holds out his hand to God on the cross, he finds nothing. My God, why have you forsaken me? And the psalmist was kicking and scratching to get God away, but God held on to his hand anyways. And Jesus is reaching out to the Father and finds nothing. Why? It's the gospel. Jesus came to pay the debt that we owe for our sin, pays it in full. It is finished. And because Jesus pays the debt in full, there's nothing left for us to pay. Like if someone pays your mortgage, awesome for you. If someone pays your mortgage and you try to keep paying for your mortgage, it's not going to pay down the debt any further. The debt's gone. You know, hopefully the bank would return the money to you, but even if they keep it, it's not paying down the debt. The debt has been paid. And there's nothing left to pay for your sins. Jesus paid it all. All to him I owe. Sin had left a crimson stain. He washed it white as snow. If you reach out a hand to God, he will grab your hand and pull you up, pull you out of your sins, out of the darkness, out of your spiritual death. Because of Jesus, because Jesus is the most unenvious person in history. Like, Jesus is not upset with us. How come, like, they did everything wrong? They did everything wrong, and they reach out their hand, and they get pulled up. and I reached out mine and I got forsaken. He's not upset about that. He's not upset that he didn't get what he deserved. He gets worse than he deserves, and we get infinitely better than we deserve. But we get that because Jesus gave it to us, because he wanted us to have it, because he loves us. When you realize what Jesus did for you and experience what he did for you, that will start to take away your envy more and more as the right thing becomes your center. Jesus is placed in the center. And so we take our envy up to God in the fear of the Lord to marvel at all of his goodness and his love and his beauty. But it's not just that. We also look ahead to the future that is guaranteed to you as a believer and follower of Jesus. Because Jesus didn't only die on the cross to pay our debts. He does that. But he also resurrects from the grave on the third day. And in Jesus' resurrection, in his defeat over death, and this new immortal life that he wins for us, we have the promise of Jesus making all things new, new heavens and a new earth in this future that is guaranteed to us. Paul tells us there's a weight of glory to that beyond all compare to anything you could experience in this life, in this world. Even the best that you could possibly experience in this world is not worth comparing. It's dust on the scales. In that future, all the things that you look at now and you wish, I wish I could have that. I wish I could be like this. I wish I could look like that. I wish I could, accomplish this. All kind of good things. And often the thing we try to put at our center is a good thing. It's just in the wrong spot. We're asking it to do something it's not meant to do. All those good things, like Billy Joel wishing he could make the most perfect masterpiece, like whatever it is that you want to accomplish or make or enjoy, or how beautiful you wish you could be, and you feel like now, today, in this life, it's never enough, it's not fulfilling enough, I can't do it well enough. In the future that God is making for us, that Jesus is making for us, there are no more tears, no more suffering, no more pain or grief. We're promised the things that have been lost will be restored to us. When we get there, it will never be a fear again. I'm not good enough. I can't do well enough. Because God will have finished the work that he's doing in you. He will have brought you to completion in him, making you perfectly represent the image of Jesus. And you'll be set free from all your insecurities and just able to enjoy things for what they are. Because you're not looking for those things that you are, those things that you do. You're not looking for them to provide some sort of meaning or worth or value to you. You already have that in Jesus perfectly. And so then you can just enjoy all the rest of it. Envy is, it's sneaky, it hides in us, it steals our joy. It happens when we put other things in the center. And yet, it's by experiencing the goodness and the beauty of God's love for us in Jesus that it starts to die. Its power starts to weaken. And Jesus is put at the center. Let me